Welcome to the Productivity Mastery Podcast, presented to you by myself, Stoyan Yankov, productivity and performance coach, keynote and TEDx speaker, and co-author of the Perform Methodology, and the book Perform, the Unsexy Truth About Startup Success. Join me on a journey to discover what some of the world's leading professionals do to be more productive, create peak performing teams, and build successful global companies. New episodes weekly. And now, enjoy today's episode. Welcome back to Productivity Mastery. Ladies and gentlemen, Stoyan here, your host. And today you're in for a special treat because today I have somebody that I've been in touch with for a number of years now. Every time I meet her, I'm like, oh my God, it's been so long. You know, I'm missing this energy. I'm missing this inspiration. She's somebody that, she's been a huge inspiration for me. We met during a passion test certification program. Mm-hmm. Disclaimer, I'm a certified passion test facilitator, and Beth was one of the master trainers leading this program, and we've been in touch recently. We had a chance to catch up, and just to give you a bit of a idea about who's here today, Beth is a team coordinator and trainer for executive teams. She specializes in behavior management, open communication methods, and train the trainer techniques, which I already mentioned. Beth has been working for over 30 years. I'm going to say that again. 30 years.
I started when I was five.
Of course. She was self-aware since she was young, right? To educate individuals, businesses, and organizational teams to create cooperation, communication, and cultural connection in all areas of their lives. She's also one of the senior master trainers for the Passion Test for Business, the Passion Test for Kids and Teens, traveling the world, facilitating training courses based on the Passion Test by Janet Atwood, the place that we met. And she's on a mission to inspire others to discover and be their highest possibility. Welcome, Beth.
Thank you.
Good morning.
I am fantastic. Life is good.
Tell me about your super special coffee.
Oh, my super special coffee. So the first thing Stoyan asked me is what happened to you special today? And when I wake up, I go in and I don't talk to anybody. I don't do anything. I go make my coffee. I make my best coffee in the whole wide world. I don't do Starbucks. I don't go out. I don't order coffee. I'm disappointed. So I get my coffee and it's that very first sip. You do that first sip. And it's, life is good. Oh my God. Life is good. I'm alive. It's good. And it's that moment of gratitude. My dad passed about 17 years ago. And it's that moment. I always used to have coffee every morning with him. And that might have something to do with it. And I just have that coffee and it's like, good morning, Dad. How are you? Like, it's just so beautiful. So that's how I get to start every single day.
But it hasn't been time that I met you that you are not in this super passionate, super high energy. So were you always like that? Or like, give us a little bit of a context of, you know, where did you grow up and when was it that you committed, I'm going to live a life of passion?
Whew, okay. So I grew up in Minnesota, little tiny town, 250 people. All right. Tiny, tiny town. And as a child, I was passionate. I'd get up in the morning. I'd go do things. Life was good, right? And I think somewhere, you know, I graduated from high school. You know, I was a really good student. I loved school. I was one of those crazy people that would fight with the teacher. I was mad if I got a 90 on a test. And I'd fight to say, hey, I found this. I went to the library and I'd find out, you know, different scores. And he would up my grade. So I was that way. And then I got married. I went to Peru as a foreign exchange student, met my husband, came back, and we immediately got married and had three kids by the time I was 24. And life happens, you know, life happens. And I, I love my children. I love my family. It's one of the most important things to me, but I put me aside. You know, I kind of set what I wanted to do aside because I had three babies and also help with my husband's business. And so I just kind of set everything aside and went through the motions. Now, like I said, I love my kids. Like that was the high point of just being there for my kids. And so I don't think it felt like I was giving anything up until they started growing. And it was like, now what? Like, what am I going to do when the kids are grown? And they were still young. So I went back to school. I went back to school. I got a degree in business and decided that I needed to have my business. And it was probably one of the hardest things I ever did was to balance. I did not balance. I tried to balance. I wish I could say I balanced, but I didn't. There were kids, there was school, there was, you know, life with my husband, and something had to give. And what gave was the relationship with my husband. And we were on a rocky road. We were on a very rocky road. And as I went back to school, got my degree, the kids grew up, I decided my passion was educating others, helping others believe in their dreams. Before I did the passion test, I had a personal growth company in Fort Lauderdale. I started in 1995, and yeah, I've been doing that ever since, and found myself first. So I probably started that company so that I could figure out who the heck I was and what I wanted. Our relationship kind of, you know, separated. And after about 5 years, believe it or not, everything seemed to be in order. I knew who I was. I was living that life. The passion test actually came along. I discovered that 10 years later, 2006, and started living my passions full out. You know, it's like this life, this is all I've got. My husband and I reunited. This year, we are celebrating our 50th wedding anniversary. And life is exactly the way I would want it to be.
Wow. Thank you so much, Beth.
So that's sharing. In a nutshell.
Thank you. There's so much we can uncover. I wonder what was some of your early, you said you started the personal growth company. What were some of the early inspiration role models for you? Maybe you read a book or you went to a seminar, a course. What was this first kind of touches with the world of personal growth that got you there?
Well, way back when, there was a trainer named Werner Erhard, and he did the EST training. And I'm talking quite a few years ago, 85 maybe. And I did the EST training, and it was like a slap across the face. Because I realized doing that training, I realized for the first time in my life, and it's hard to believe that you can be 20, 30 years old and not know you're the author of your life. You are the author of your life. And I didn't know that. I thought things just happened to me. You know, things happen to me and then I respond. And it's not my fault. It just happens to me. And in that training, the most beautiful, it was a tough training. Back in the day, you couldn't eat, you didn't take breaks. I mean, it was heavy duty. Things have changed since then for personal growth. But for me, it was really good because it really taught me that first realization. If I'm the author of my life, why did I create this? You know, what am I thinking? What are my belief systems? Because it wasn't pretty then. And so I got the realization, if I'm the author, then I can unlearn, I can change, I can do things differently. And that was the very beginning. That was the first course I did. We were still in California. And then we moved here in Florida, 1990. And I couldn't find anything. And then found another wonderful mentor, Bill Riedler. It's called Understanding Yourself and Others. And he wrote tons of books. He has since passed. But that's where I started being a trainer of trainers. He said he actually had cancer. We didn't know this. he knew that he wasn't going to be around. So he grabbed about 12 of his trainers and said, I want to pass this on to you. I want you to do this. And, you know, are you committed to bring this personal growth out into the world so that people can discover what their limiting beliefs are so that they can transpose them? And so I said, yes, became a trainer. We did in a very intense, it was about an 8-year program, and completely changed the way I see the world, right? Circumstances sometimes don't change, but the way that I saw the world allowed me to do something about those circumstances. And so I'm deeply grateful to the training I got from Bill. He passed it on. I kept my word. I'm going to keep it going. And here I am today.
I'm happy you did.
And, me and, too.
You're touching upon a super important topic. Unfortunately, I don't know how is it in the US. I grew up in Bulgaria, right? Like nowhere in the educational system we had self-awareness classes or personal development, like goal setting, all these kind of things. And you know, you were fortunate in a way to come across such a seminar, or maybe you were searching for these things, and some people find books, seminars, they start on the path, on the journey. But I wonder, like, imagine somebody's listening right now, and what would be your advice? What would be the first steps for people when it comes to really trying to figure out who they are?
My first steps, I would say, you know, go into a library. You don't even have to buy a book. Go into a library, go to the personal growth section, because a lot of people have income problems, right? And they can't be buying books every week. But we have this wonderful tool in the United States all over, where you can go in, I think they exist pretty much all over the world, where you can go in and borrow books. And so, you know, go through and just see, does anything resonate with you? I literally pick up a book, open it, find a passage, and if there's something that speaks to me, I get that book, right? Now, I have an illness. I buy books. I keep them. I don't borrow them from the library, but you do have that option, because there's certain books. And then if they're incredible, I give them to somebody. You know, I say, hey, this book might be in service to you. So buy that book. Go ahead and do anything that you can to get information. Some of the information isn't going to fit. Everything you do will not work. But take one little thing you get out of a seminar, out of a workshop, out of this call today, one little thing, and commit, I will take action on this little tiny thing today. I'm going to take one action different than I did yesterday, and I'm going to do that for 60 days. 60 days, I'm going to try something new, and I guarantee, you call me back if this doesn't work, I guarantee that things will begin to shift. And so that's my advice, is make one little change. It's going to change your path. See, I love this. People say, oh, I fell off my path. You can't fall off your path. It's your path. You can't. It's impossible to fall off your path. Now, your path might get kind of squiggly. You know, maybe it's not that straight line you thought it was. In fact, none of our paths are. But you're going to maybe take a side road, and that side road becomes the path, right? But you don't know until you take that action. So do baby steps, take an action, and then see where it leads you.
Absolutely love it. And it's like this never-ending journey. Because once you get onto this path, it's like you understand that you are never a complete kind of version. Like there's always you know, something to explore, something new to learn, something new to improve. Like we're just human beings, and we're definitely not perfect. But also there's this sense of completion in a way when you are on the path, when you do small steps and you kind of learn something new. And it's like, yeah, you know what? I realized that this belief is not something that I relate to. It's something that I picked somewhere on the way, based on the circumstances, based on the people around me, the educational system, the closest people, right? Like you picked some story, narrative.
Yes.
But is that truly who you are?
Yeah. Well, I agree with you 100%. See, it could have been who we were as a kid to survive. You know, there's certain things that happen and we get on this survival mode, you know, and you did that to survive. So it was the right step for you at that time. And then you grow up and it's like, ooh, that belief doesn't serve me anymore. That's not one that I want to cultivate because I can see the places it keeps me stuck. And so shifting into, all right, let me take a breath and try something different because it's scary. It's even bad situations, if they're known, aren't as scary as new situations. And so you got to jump off that cliff. And sometimes it's just a little hill. You know, sometimes it's a little hill, but until you make that shift, you don't know it's a little hill. It feels like, you know, the Grand Canyon, and it's not. So, you know, as I started shifting and then got hungry, really hungry for, oh my gosh, this feels so much better than the other thing. Once you start taking risks, risks are just opportunities. But you have to do that first, you know, you got to take the first step, and it's scarier than heck. You know, it's scary when you say, I am going to separate my relationship. I've got three young kids. I'm going to do something different. It was the scariest time in my life. And as I did that, realizing, oh, we're okay. You know, we can do this, and pushing me to do more things than I ever thought that I could do. And then coming back full, you know, I can see in the relationship where I was totally leaning on my husband for just about everything, including my happiness. You know, when we're expecting somebody else to make us happy, what a pressure for that poor other person. I look at him, I remember the day I said, how did you put up with me for 25 years? And I'm a pretty good person, you know? And he goes, well, there's all these other wonderful qualities you had, you know? But I can see the pressure I was putting on him, even for my happiness. And so as I took that on myself, as I became the full person that I came here to be, he could then love me, back me, because I wasn't putting that pressure on him. And so we both got to be full, complete people, came back together, and life is fun. It's just fun.
Well, thank you so much, Beth, for sharing that. And I think now could be a good time to give a bit of a idea to the people listening. What is this thing, passion test? Like,
okay,
we had the chance to meet during a passion test certification program. I personally do myself the passion test every few months just to make sure I'm doing the things that make me happy, that the things that I love, yep, at this very moment. But yep, give us a bit of an overview. What is the passion test? And what was it about the passion test that kept you there for, you said 2006 you joined?
I'm still there. So, yes. Still there. Yeah. So another mentor, absolutely. So I went to... I first did, a friend of mine came to me like crazy enthusiastic. She was a person who worked with me in the global as the trainer of trainers. Well, we were doing that work, and she came one day, we were doing a training, and she said, you got to do this, this is a cool thing. And she was crazy, even more than me, off the charts, enthusiastic. And I was like, yeah. I had done every training known to man, and I did not even think that this was going to be really too much in service to me. So I just kind of said, yeah, when we have a break, you'll do it. Because she goes, you got to do this thing. It's called the passion test. So the whole weekend came and went, and we, of course, didn't have time. And talk about intentions. My intention was not to do it, right? And it just sounded kind of passion test. You know, it didn't provoke me to do it. And so she knows I'm a foodie. You know, I love my coffee. I'm a foodie. And she said, I'll tell you what, I will buy your lunch. We were on the way to the airport if you let me give you the passion test. And I was like, what's there to lose? Free lunch. You know, there is something called a free lunch. I'm going to get it right now. So we were sitting at the table and it was on a napkin. She was writing on a napkin, right? What are your passions? Well, the waiter comes over to the table and I'm sobbing. Like I am like, not just tears. I was like full. And he turned around and walked the other way. And I went, no, you come and get our order anyway. I'm going to cry the whole time. You get our order. So he went and got the order. I finished the passion test and I went back and started giving the passion test to everybody. Like I said, Tanya, send me this stuff, right? I was giving it to everybody. So for 2 years, from 2006 to 2008, it became my intake model for the personal growth courses, because when people walked in knowing what they wanted, when they had that clarity, they had something to work for. The personal growth courses now had a purpose. And so I was doing that for 2 years. And then Janet Atwood came to Fort Lauderdale, and a friend of mine said, "Hey, I have a table. You know, she's speaking. Do you want to buy a place at the table?" And I said, "God, I'd love to meet Janet. Made such an impact." So in 2008, I met Janet. It was March of 2008. And she then was talking, inviting people to do certification. And I kind of went, "Certification to do what?" And she said, "To give the passion test." And I said, "Well, I've been doing the passion test for 2 years." I thought her head was going to spin around like The Exorcist. She goes, "What? You need to sign up for certification." I said, "Yes, I will. I didn't know there was a certification." So I did the certification. I legally became a passion test facilitator. And I remember a little after that training, I called and said, "Hey, do you want a trainer? I want to train this," because I could see the very quick impact it made. See, my journey was a little bit longer, and I did discover what matters most to me and started doing it. But I could see the tool for the passion test was it saved a lot of years of discovery. It's an incredible method to do that. So I did that, became a trainer, and then in 2009, so about a year and a half later, we created the passion test for business, because if this works personally, could it work for business? And started giving it to companies, corporations, solopreneurs, and I could see that, yes, there was an immediate shift for businesses, because they could create the clarity, and then it was like a lighthouse. They could then go down the road of how do I get to where I want to go now that I have the clarity. And that's what the passion test really does. In business, we call it ASAP engagement, advanced solutions for activating passionate engagement, because the passion test sounds kind of airy-fairy for business. I'm the first one to say, "Really? Passion in business? That sounds a little dangerous." Well, it's not.
I had a similar story the first time I encountered the passion test. Pretty much, it was around 2000, maybe 13, 14. Janet started coming to the Nordic countries, and I was living in Denmark at the time. And I think I met her first at a conference in Norway. Uh-huh. And it's like, "Our next speaker, talk about the passion test." Okay. Like, all right, the next woo-woo person is going to do it.
Yeah,
like, you know?
Yeah.
And then I did the test, like, you know, that's something to into that thing, you know? That's like, nice. Why did I never ask myself these questions? Like, what do you love to do? Like, because you have all these goals, ambitions, which is amazing. But you know, you got to fine-tune it towards what makes me happy at the end of
that's
the day.
Right. That's right.
And I love that you guys actually, and I want to go there in just a bit to talk about the passion in business. But like it was just this, you know, revelation of like, it's so simple, but I never actually took the time to stop and to ask myself, why do I do these things? What are the things that give me most joy and happiness and fill me up in this moment in life? Because in 4 months from now, it's probably going to be a little different or more. Mm-hmm. And when you do the test, it's like, You get these shocks. It's like, really? This is not number two? like number two. And by the way, guys, for those of you who are listening, the two is as such that you find out by the end of this, what are the five top passions that you have at this moment? Or in other words,
what are the things that matter most in my life? That's pretty much, you know, if you don't want to use the word passion, what are the things that matter most today for me in my life for my joy and happiness?
Definitely. So what are the things that matter most at this very moment? And how do you live them more?
Mm-hmm.
What do you do? What do you have to do to live them more? By the way, Beth, I don't know if it's my headphones Something with the mic. I'm hearing you a little bit. Let me just see. Oh, now it's good. Now it's good. Say something. Okay.
Hello, hello, hello.
We're back. We're back. There was something going on. Okay. This is the live recording, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, coming back. So the passion test, and by the way, those of you listening, you can go and check out online where is the next passion test event where you can actually have some facilitator to do the test for you. Can find a facilitator. There's thousands and thousands of facilitators all around the world, so you can find somebody to do a one-on-one session with you. Mm-hmm. You can buy the book to begin with, go to the Passion Test webpage. It's an amazing tool to, first of all, individually find what are the things that make you happy. But I think the second point, which I'm even more excited about, as you know, Beth, I'm working a lot with teams, with companies, and for me, it's always about how can we build more engaged, more motivated, more productive culture in an organization. And there are multiple research studies that show you when people do what they love to do, there's usually they stay longer, they're more engaged, they're more productive. That's not the only factor, but it's definitely a factor that is worth considering. So talk to me about that, the passion test for business. Or I forgot what was the official
ASAP formula. Engagement.
There you go.
ASAP is like as soon as possible, right? ASAP engagement. So it's advanced solutions for activating passionate engagement. And in that process is the passion test. So there's a little bit more. It's expanded. We created more for companies because you're not only dealing with the owners of the company, the corporation board, you're dealing with employees. And so we had to do things to staff, employees, volunteers. See, here's what's cool. This process, ASAP engagement, the passion test that we do in business, supports classrooms, nonprofits, any group, because it brings everybody together. So there's two parts to it, right? The first one is the company, the board, the group. I'm going to call it the group, right? The main umbrella figures out, we help them support what is their unique contribution. And when I talk about unique contribution, it is really what is it? What is the driver for the company, right? What is the umbrella that everybody works under? And the reason anybody that is familiar with Simon Sinek, he always talks about your why, crucial. I agree with him 100%. I love his work, follow him all the time, because he is talking about the core, which is your why. Now, unique contribution is a tiny bit different, right? And I like it because it takes it a step further. There's thousands of millions of coaches probably in the world, millions, right? And somebody say, what do? I do coaching. Well, that's kind of generic, right? So what do you do different than the coach next door? How do I know if you're a good fit for me, right? So there's a unique contribution that we help you come up with that says, what makes me different so that I know what my niche is, so that people come to me and say, oh, I heard you do this thing different than the thousands of other coaches in the world, right? So the first thing we do, and I don't care if you're a chef, if you're a janitorial company, if you're a deli, finding out what your unique contribution is like a lighthouse. And I love the vision of a lighthouse because it is the lighthouse. People come to you when they know what you're doing, if it resonates. So some unique contributions, I had a deli, I go into the deli and I said, God, I love, there was just a feeling about that deli here in Boca Raton, lots of delis, right? Really nice delis. And I said, what is it that you do? Well, we took some time and figured out his unique contribution. I bring love to your table. I bring love to your table. And that's what it felt like. See, he already knew that's what he did, but he never put it in words. Well, the minute you put that on business cards and things, his catering business went crazy because who doesn't want love at their table? Right? How cool is that? So first part is the unique contribution, helping somebody discover, what do I do a little bit different than somebody else? All right. Then you let everybody in the company know this is who we are. You know, the very first passion test for business we did was a pilot program with a company in Mexico. And they were doing wonderful work. It was called Listen Up Español. Now, I just happened to speak Spanish. And so Chris called and he said, will you come with me? The passion test for business did not yet exist. And he said, will you come with me? Because you're the only trainer we have that speaks Spanish. And I was like, and I've been doing this for business. I had been working with companies one-on-one because the passion test for business did not exist and had been doing the passion test with those companies. And it was crude. It was not polished, but there was something that I had done in the companies that allowed them to figure out how they were different from somebody else. So we went down to Mexico, we did the passion test for business, and this company just blew off the charts, right? They absolutely transformed everything they were doing. They were very much into culture. They created an amazing culture based on their unique contribution. And it was really easy. Their unique contribution was providing awesomeness. That was it. Providing awesomeness in everything they did. And then based on that, they said, well, what are the things that matter most for you to provide awesomeness? And in that whole situation back and forth, the passion test for business was created. And we have since streamlined it. But that company the next year increased their $1.4 million. The only thing they did different was created a culture that they could communicate. Oh, here's a really cool thing about this company. So they were a team of 20 people that started the company a few years back, right? And then they grew super fast. It was a call center. And they grew to 1,300 people in a very short amount of time. So that core people, they knew what their unique contribution was. It was unspoken. But then as the hiring process happened, it got diluted and diluted and diluted. And then the new people that came had no idea who they were and what they were about, because they were about providing awesomeness even for the community. They were doing hospitals and community. I mean, they were just doing amazing things for the community, but nobody knew that. When they did their passion test and created the unique contribution, and then they published their passions, they let everybody know this is what we're about. Oh my gosh. It was like everybody wanted to support this company because one of their passions was supporting the community, right? Supporting their employees. One of their passions was we're helping staff grow brain cells because they were paying for trainings for their staff, right? So when somebody's doing all this amazing stuff for your community, do you not want to support that community? Of course you do. So that's part one, is helping a company figure out what's my unique contribution. What are the things that are most important to me to do that unique contribution? That's part one. Okay. Part two is, how do we include the employees, the people that work with you? And I say with you, not for you, because it's always got to be a back and forth. These people work with you. And yes, you've got different functions, no doubt about it. But in that, the second part is, well, let's make sure that our employees are loving what they do. So we do a passion test from you. For them, it says, when my work is ideal, here are my passions. And so there's an individual test for them to say, well, what is it that I love? Why am I attracted to this company? Why does this company want me? So they get to figure out what their purpose in the company is and the things that they love. Well, let me tell you, the culture, the excitement, the things that happened in that company were off the charts. And so that those two components, so that now we do have a highly engaged, creative workforce. You know, one of the things that happened, some of the people, a group that were doing filming, right? And they just loved filming products. And when you're selling products, they send you a set. Here's a video that you can show your customers of our product. Well, they decided to take that video and do their own filming. So they went out into the public and did it in Spanish, interviewing people that had used their products. Those, the things that they did out in the community were selling more. That tool was a better tool than the company had sent them. So much that the company said, can we use your videos? Now, here's what happened that was so cool. They created these people that wanted to do filming. When they filled out their passion test, they said, what I'd really like to do is this full time. I don't really want to call people. I want to do the filming. Well, they created a whole department that was just making videos for their products. It became their production department. So knowing what mattered most to these people, they created a tool for them to be doing exactly what they wanted to do. It was not calling people at the call center. It was absolutely creating these amazing videos and many, many, many more stories like that.
By the way, I just love your energy when you talk about that. You should just see your eyes. Like, you're so passionate about this. No? Yeah, let's do it. But I want to go practical, like, you know me.
Yeah.
Like, can you give me some examples of what could be just for us to understand, like, when my life is ideal at work, what could be an example some employees, for example, right there? Is that specific Good. Responsibilities Yep. or tasks or what is it?
Yep. So when my life is ideal at work, you come up with a list of 10 and then you fine tune it down to 5, right? And the reason we use 5 is because the brain can hang on to about 5 to 7 pieces of information at a time. So we know that to be true. So we bring it down to 5. So some models, I would like to be a manager. Okay. I want to manage people. Another one said, I want to be able to provide for my family. I mean, they were simple things that made all the difference. Another passion is I don't want to work with people. I want to do something by myself. I'm an introvert. They put that down on paper. Well, do you think it matters for the company to know that? That person is going to be productive filing in the back room, doing it. I mean, whatever it is, there's got to be a ton of things that people don't have to be around too many people. Somebody else, I want to be a star. I want to be one of those people that get filmed. I want to go out in the public and do that acting. I'll do calling halftime, but I want to do acting another time. Well, so as they started writing down, what else? When my life at work is ideal, oh, I have an environment that is orderly, right? There was not order. And for some people, they can't do their work if there's not order. Yet you can relate, right? What else? When my life is ideal, I can choose my hours. Ooh, all right, let's see how that works. Like, will their productivity increase or decrease if that happens? Let's test it out. So the thing that happened with this company is they got all this info. Oh, this is, you're going to love this story. So they got all this feedback, right? And they found out some people were not in alignment with the company. They absolutely did not have, they were there for the paycheck. You know, they were working in Mexico and they needed the money. So here's what, listen up, Espanol was courageous, by the way. They said, I'll tell you what, anybody that feels like this isn't a good fit for you, we will buy you out. We will pay you 3 months, but you need to leave and you never get to come back. Okay? It was a pretty cool offer. Here's what happened. 300 people left. So I remember Chris Atwood and I are going, uh-oh. Now, it was like a fourth of their company, right, decided to go. And Chris and I and the owners of the company, Tony and I can't think of his name now. I should. He's a huge force to be reckoned with. Mm. I'll think of it in a moment. Anyway, all of us were like, oh my gosh, what do we do now, right? So we waited for a while. Guess what? Nothing bad happened. Those were the people that were already not engaged. They were already the ones wasting time. They were already the ones that were only there for a paycheck. 300 people left. Productivity increased because the people that were there were in alignment. They were loving what they were doing. They were highly engaged. They were creative, and their income increased 1.4 million. So it's pretty amazing. It was scary. It was like, oh, we made a mistake. Nope. The concepts work. You have to have the courage to test them out.
I'm getting goosebumps here. And the reason is, I know it works. You know, yeah. Now you have the numbers, you have the case, but it's just, for me, it's surprising. So few business leaders, managers, executives, entrepreneurs actually take the time to understand not just what people excel at when it comes to skill set and experience, but what really lights their heart on fire, what really excites them, what are they motivated, why are they part of this thing? And as you said, the defining your unique contribution, like there's, yeah. You know, there's so many. We are a cybersecurity company that is providing a software to, like, okay, fantastic. Why does it matter? Why should people yeah. care? Because when people align around this unique contribution, like
yeah.
we have an example in, I actually added it in the book from my accountant. It's like, okay, accountant, unique contribution, right? Like, but like, how did my accountant win me as a client? Mm-hmm. I was checking different accountants or looking for an accountant, right? So I asked my network, do you know anybody? So I'm checking different people. I go to the webpage of this guy and on the webpage it says, I help small business owners sleep better at night. And he does it. He like the way you talk about passionate culture, that's when he starts talking about he helps this founder and with the administration and this, and he was struggling, and like he's the same, right? Like that's his passion, that's his motivation. And of course I'm gonna talk about him here at the podcast and add him in a book, and he's probably gonna be a lot more likely to find people to work with him, right?
Want to sleep well at night.
I want to sleep at night, well at night, or like what you said, bring what was it? Bring love to your table. Was it?
Yeah, I bring love to the table.
I bring love to the table. I mean, this is so much, like, everything. It tells I gotta cook or bake something with love. Like, it has to be beautiful, nice,
right.
Well designed. The way I serve it, it needs to be, you know, in a certain way. You can't just go grumpy and say, hey, here is your love. You know, like,
that's
you
right.
have to live it. You have to live it. And that's what excites people to join you on board, clients, investors, you name it, right? Like when you define your unique contribution, and the more you take the time to understand who your people are, who the people I'm working with, what are they about? Do they care about this thing? You might have this super, super good person that's very skilled, but they really don't care about the thing that, like, as you said, like, maybe the best thing is you part ways.
And that's right.
You help them out. They help you out. They become ambassadors because they, you know, but, oh my God, I'm just.
it is so exciting. You know, one of my favorite people, I met him through Janet and Chris, Steve Farber. And he's got a series of books out. I love him. He's got a heart of gold. And back in the day, we were talking about creating the passion. It was the beginning of the passion test for business and writing a business book about it. And so I met with him quite a few times, just fell in love with the guy. He's an amazing guy. I was actually separated at the time, but he was married. So I was like, oh, darn it. You know, that one didn't work out. But we have an amazing friendship, and I got to work with them, Kim and his wife, Veronica, who are amazing. And he, like I said, he had already been an author. He had written quite a few books. The newest book is Love is Just Damn Good Business. And I was working with them. He knew what his unique contribution was, but didn't really communicate it. They didn't use that tool. So we went to dinner one night and I said, hey, let's work on your unique contribution. Right. And so started, you know, bringing it out. And one of the things, so we did their passions. In the passions, we found a unique contribution that felt like it fit. Right. And then as we were doing the passion test, all of a sudden he gets this stop. Right. This is it. This is it. And it was doing what you love in service of people who love what you do. Now, they had that catchphrase forever. He says that in all his speeches, doing what you love in service of people who love what you do. But he didn't realize this is our umbrella. Everything we do is about creating opportunities for people to do what they love in service to people who love what they do. And I think that's another piece of loving what you do, is that service piece. Is there a way that you can serve others doing what you love? Because then law of attraction says you will be successful. You know, I think we had a moment yesterday and people talked about business. And one of the beliefs is, oh, you know, I don't have to be a millionaire. It's okay. I just want to make a living. And for any of you out there saying that, stop it. Stop saying, I don't want to be a millionaire, because if you're a millionaire and you're doing good work, you're going to do more good work. You will do more of the things that you love, doing what you love in service of people who love what you do. So when you become a millionaire, by the way, businesses must make money or they can't do the things that they came here to do. So up the ante. I want to be a millionaire. Let's do 1 million and then we'll work to 2 million. Because doing what you love, being a millionaire, everybody wins. Everybody wins. Your community wins. You win. Your employees win. I don't know about you, but there was a time in my life that I did not have money. I did not have money. We were scraping by. We were a young family, you know, kids, and it was tough. And let me tell you, today things are a little different. I like going first class. If I get to choose first class or coach, I'm choosing first class. All right. I might be a snob. I don't care. I show up at a workshop way more rested. If I had a, you know, 12-hour flight to another country, if I'm in first class, I show up different than being all cranky and coach. It's just the truth. And so if you get to choose, I would say go for the millionaire. Go for it. Make the money, because T. Harv Eker says money makes you more of what you already are. Money makes you more of what you already are. So if you are a good person giving to others, serving others, guess what? You will be more in service. I can donate more money today than I ever could in my life. You know, there are certain things out in the world, and I'm a foodie, right? I'm totally a foodie. So I donate every month to the World Kitchen. I see Jose Andres doing this good work all over the world, helping people eat. God, eating is important to me. I want other people to get off a train and have that hot meal. So look for what's in alignment with you. I couldn't do that before. I was worrying about how we were going to feed the kids and make rent. Right? So the more money I make, the more I can be in service to others.
It resonates.
I went on a different tangent, but oh well.
It resonates so much. Like every time, you know, I'm traveling, for example, for business, doing these conferences, they usually book you these 5-star hotels, and you know, like they treat you really nicely, right? And it's like you just get into this incredible hotel room, and it's like it's just different, you know, like the way you feel being in a premium exclusive environment, when like you're different, you could be more creative, you can give more, you can, you know, with the resources that you make. And I think that's the kind of the operational system challenge, the personal operational system challenge that we have to find. Like there's the highly spiritual people that are just like, I don't want to be rich, you know, like material is not, and it's like, and then the other side is like, it's all about the money, let's go, right, let's grow, right. And then it's like, but there's you can do both.
Yes, you can.
And look, we you said, I don't know if you were in this situation. I mean, I grew up in Eastern Europe in the 90s. The default here, the default here is like you're struggling with financials and money and resources.
Absolutely.
That's the default, right? But yep. the good part is, and many founders from the region are listening, the good part is you have this survival of instincts. Yes. Like you can make it with any kind of budget.
That's right.
You'll figure it out. The challenge is, sometimes it can have an effect on your operational system and your, contribute to scarcity kind of mindset.
Yes. Yes.
Of I don't deserve, I'm not good enough, I don't have enough, and those kind of things. So maybe if you can talk about that, like again, there's many entrepreneurs listening, specifically from Central, from Eastern Europe. And I think if you can maybe share a little bit about mindset and how do we get into, I think in the universe of the passion, there's this more the expansive mindset, the abundance mindset. Like how do we switch the story, Beth?
Very good. Oh my, that's one of my, I love doing beliefs because it is about shifting belief. Remember I said I grew up in a little tiny town, 250 people. We had a lot of difficulties. My dad was a factory worker. My mom also, you know, had a family of four, and I had powdered milk and powdered cheese. And I mean, it was tough. Like we did not, it was one of the things, talk about planting a seed. We were a struggling family. I probably didn't ever go hungry, but the quality of my food was not, no way, right? Ugh. And I decided at about age 7 that I was going to make money. And so I was an entrepreneur doing anything I could, selling Christmas cards, collecting cans. I just did everything I could to collect money. And I remember there was a point in my life that I had more money in the bank than my mom and dad. And they would borrow money from me. And I knew that I had to charge interest. And so that's, I grew up with because of that hardship, I grew up with a different mindset. Now, the mindset of scarcity was always underneath. It was always right there at the border. And so there was a time that I had a ton of money saved, but I would not spend it because I believed my value was my money. And many of us believe our value is my money. So I couldn't spend it. I couldn't enjoy it. I didn't have fun around it. I would be, oh, do I buy this or not? Oh, it's going to reduce my bank account. I struggled because my belief was still scarcity. And what I discovered along with all the trainings that I've done, I started seeing I have to change that base to I did it before, I can do it again. Money is just a tool we use to bring out the best in others. Money is simply a tool we use. This is a quote from Bill Reeder. Money is simply a tool we use to bring the best out in others. I wasn't even bringing the best out in me. And so I started using, investing, finding out, oh, I can support this. I can do that. Oh, I can start a business. I can take some risks. Because if at 7, I could create income, my God, now, you know, a few years later, I have many more tools. And it's just money. It's just money. It's just an energy exchange that I can create at any moment in time. So how did I make that shift? I think that was the question you were asking. I started looking at what do I have now? You know, people say, I want to be rich. Okay, let's see what that means to you. What does being rich mean? Let's define it, right? Well, I back it up a little bit and I just ask the question, do you have a computer? Well, everybody looking at this obviously does, right? Do I have a cell phone? Do I have more than one pair of shoes? Do I have a refrigerator? Does it have food in it? Right? You're already richer than 90% of the world's population. So if you can see that you already are, anything else is, oh, I already am rich. I'm just looking at it with, remember I said the perspective changes? You change your perspective, by the way, a little tiny bit. You don't have to do a huge change. You do a little change. Oh, I am rich. So where I put my attention grows stronger in my life. It's one of the concepts from the Passion Test. Where I put my attention grows stronger in my life. And so if I'm already rich, and for many of us, it might be, I'm already enough. I don't have to prove anymore. I already am enough. Look at all I have done and have in my life. So now where do I want to contribute some of that enoughness? Where do I, because I'm rich, where can I contribute some of that? See, we are infinity. And so if I get a fill up, I don't know if you can, so I do a fill up, right? I fill my heart, I fill with money, I fill with joy, I fill, and then I can give. Now here's the truth. You give and it comes back. So you have to take the first step. You have to say, where am I rich? And you write down all the ways you're rich. Oh, I can now give because I know I'm rich. Well, that attracts richness. That attracts abundance. Where am I enough? Here and here. Look at all the things I've done. I'm enough. Make your list. Now, there's these other places that you want to improve. You know, there's this much. You're not enough. But stop looking over at this. Look at all the ways you are. Where am I the best chef? Oh, I'm working at this little place. You know, this little place. I serve my customers. They love me. This is where I'm the best chef. And then you are going to continue to increase because law of attraction says like attracts like. If I am living in not enoughness, that's what I'll attract. If I see where I am the best, I make the best hamburgers in any place. I make the best coffee anybody does, right? And so when I put my attention on that, people come in and they're like, oh, I love your coffee. Yeah, I make the best coffee. Now I make it for me. I'm willing to share it with you, right? So the first step is wherever you want to improve, increase, get better, find out where you already are. You have to have a belief, even if it's tiny. You know, I always talk to people and I say, you know, people do affirmations. Oh, I'm the best. You know, they're starting to lose weight and they say, oh, I'm the perfect size. Well, there's a little tiny voice that goes, no, you aren't. You're a fat slob. There's that little tiny voice and it tells you what your true belief is. It always will tell you. So if you do an affirmation and you are not looking for the evidence where it's already true, there will be this little voice that tells you it's not true. That's the voice that you're putting energy to. Believe it or not, you say that affirmation 20 times, you go, I'm rich, I'm rich, I'm rich. But the voice goes, no, you don't even have another pair of shoes. What's wrong with you? Right? Listen to that voice, write it down and go, oh, that's where I'm giving all my energy. See, our subconscious runs at 17,000 bits per minute, per second, 17,000 bits per second. Consciousness is about 200 miles an hour, right? So the unconscious is way more powerful than the conscious. Quantum physics, it's a lot of woo-woo stuff, but it's got some really good scientific evidence. Those numbers come from The Answer. It's a wonderful book by Asaraf. I forget his name, but last name's Asaraf. Anyway, it's really cool.
John.
Thank you, John Asaraf. I like to quote my people, right, and give him credit. And it's really wonderful because when you look at quantum physics, that little voice has got way more power. So recognize the voice, write it down, and say, oh, I didn't know that was my belief. Let's shift it. Let me see where I am enough. Let me see where I have enough. Well, let me see where I can contribute. It might be a dollar a month. I don't care what it is, but you have to not only change your belief, take action on the change. See, that's the piece that a lot of people, they do affirmations and they sit in the chair and say, this is supposed to happen. Well, it won't until you take action. And I just say, do a baby step. You want to, you know, get healthy? All right, today I'm taking out sugar, only today. Tomorrow, I open it up, right? Just to do a tiny baby step, but you must take action. And then you can say, you know what? That worked okay. I'm going to do it again. In fact, I'm going to go for a 5-minute walk. That's it, 5 minutes. And then do that, right? So you make a declaration, do the declaration, and then you can add on. I was doing my son, I wanted to get healthier, right? It wasn't about losing weight. I wanted to be healthy. He goes, let's go on the bike. So I started on the bike. I remember we did 5 miles and I was like, oh my God, I can't do that. I was dying. And so I decided that I was going to go a half a mile every week more, half a mile every week. Well, when I reached 25 miles, I was like, God, I couldn't do 5 miles. Now I can go 25 miles, 20 miles, 3 times a week. And I'm like, well, that wasn't as hard as I thought it was. Because I just added on a little piece each week, right? So, all right, I don't even know what question you asked, but I hope I answered it.
I just want to say, I hope everybody listening is feeling good enough the way Beth feels she's the best in making coffee. That's the first thing. but then I like when you start speaking about it, it's really like, it's like, your mind is like a garden, right? And you know, no matter how beautiful, amazing garden you have, there's gonna be weeds and weird kind of plants kind of growing up by themselves. And unless you consciously go around and, you know, check out for those weeds and try to take them out, because, you know, they're gonna be there. And it's the same with the same with your inner voice, inner conversations, the way you kind of put yourself down. And and when you kind of have the conscious effort to say, you know what, the stuff that I said in this moment doesn't really serve me. Like okay, I caught it. Let's switch the story. Hey, I got it from here. Little Stoyan, right? Like
that's, yeah,
I got that, you know? Like, and then it's all about the operational system.
Yeah.
You have the right operational system. You know what your passions are. You know what makes you happy. You know what you're all about and what your strengths, the self-awareness piece. You're feeling good enough. You don't need anything, right? You're only there to serve and to build and grow. Then you can start a company. Then you can get on board people who are sharing similar principles, values, and beliefs, and help them, coach them to get even better, give them to do what they're passionate about. And wow, what is the chance for you to succeed? Much higher, I would argue.
Much higher. And you know what? Here's the deal. Even if you don't succeed right away, you're having a way better time. You know, life is way more enjoyable. Even if you don't reach the top of the mountain, you know, you're climbing up there, you're smelling the flowers, you're sitting down, you're making coffee over a stove, whatever it is, like the journey becomes enjoyable, so you don't have to reach there. Now, you will reach there if that might be the goal, but if you're having joy along the way. See, humans were made to be in joy. We really came here to be in joy. And so along that path, if you can be in joy, you're better than 90% of the world's population. Like, you are rich when you wake up. And if just a cup of coffee makes you happy, you know, it's pretty darn good, because anything else that happens to you, for you, is, I also woke up one day and I said, everything that has ever happened to me, with me, and for me comes from love. I woke up, I wrote that down. I think it was 2008 or so. I wrote it down and I started living my life as if everything that has ever happened to me, with me, and for me comes from love. My parents not having money were a beautiful contribution for me to say, you know what? I want more. Not only do I want more, I want to help others have more, whatever their more is. So I look at all the things that happened in my past, and they were my training ground. They were my foundation to say, can I do it different? And can I teach others? Can I guide them to their greatness? You know, that's my whole life. Get information, pass it on. Get information, pass it on.
I these days tend to tell to people, you know, if you were AI, you know, like some sort of a ChatGPT something, and you just ask yourself, how would I optimize my life so I'm happy and successful? What would the AI, the chatbot,
that's cool. What would it write about you?
like what would be the operational system? I just love the you know, the 2008 revelation that came for you, right? Like, it's, what if any adversity, every difficult moment is actually a blessing? Wow.
It is. All you have to do is look for how it is. See, any statement we make, when you look for that evidence, you will find it. And so when we talk about positive statements, it's like, you have to look for it. You have to do the work. You have to go down the road. That's the path. And when you do, I mean, sometimes I looked for evidence for 2 weeks. I seriously was like, that doesn't feel very loving. That felt terrible. And you feel it first, right? So spirituality isn't you let it go. You feel it. You're pissed about it. You're mad. You go through the feelings and say, well, if it was loving, if one little piece of it was loving, what was it? And I always found it. Sometimes it took longer than others. So anything that you want, write it down, start looking for that evidence, even little baby steps. And when you hear that voice, that's where you get to do the work. You get to do the work to say, Is that really true? Like, is that the only good thing that came out of that? Let's find something else and then focus on your new belief.
Love it, Pat. So final question around the, you know, because we talk about passion the whole episode, passion, you know, like being happy, love. For many business people, it's like these soft topics, you know, like how is that related to business? And I want you to talk about this in this kind of relation between, all right, we get our teams to find what they're passionate about and all these things. But at the end of the day, we got to get things done. We gotta move mountains. We got to be productive. We got to get results. How do we do both? Because let's be honest, there's companies that are too woo-woo. Hey, we have to be happy. They don't really perform. They're just using this as an excuse to not do stuff. And they're disorganized and structured. But how do we create teams that are both passionate and productive?
Very good. Excellent question. So when you have gotten the weeds out, and this is where I'm going to use Listen Up Español as a beautiful company. 300 people said, I'm out of here. I don't believe in this. It is woo-woo. Let me take the money because that's what I'm interested in. All right. So the weeds got pulled out and the people that were left were acknowledged. See, the company says, I see you. This is your contribution to the company. So this is my contribution to you. And it's not a so this, it's you're going to give to me and I'm going to give to you, right? It is a two-way street. I can guarantee a company figuring out their unique contribution and their passions, everybody now gets to visibly see this is where I fit in. And this is where the company, they have stated that they're giving back to me. That automatically raises, and I'm going to talk woo-woo for a minute, the vibrational level of the company. All right. There are a couple great books. One of them is Power Versus Force by, I forget authors. I'm so sorry. Power Versus Force talks about physical measurement, physics of vibration. And a company that is living in joy, the creativity increases. It's impossible for that to happen. So a company needs to look at somebody, let's say an employee comes in and they go, oh my God, I've got a great idea, blah, 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 blah. Now the company gets to look at it and say, productivity, how will this increase or decrease our bottom line? What part of that might be useful? See, because a company must make money. I am not one of the woo-woo people that says, I get joy and sprinkle petals and no. You must make money. So every one of those pieces, by the way, when your company does its passions, it then comes up with a culture action plan, action. So remember I said the passion test was a part of it. Something that I didn't mention was now I have a passion that says we do the impossible. That was one of Listen Up's passions, right? And so they say, okay, how will this affect our bottom line? What can we do to create the impossible? And they take concrete steps, this, 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 and this. Well, this is what it's going to cost us. What's the option? How much money will this make, right? That's when you take these passions and say, what are the actions to create them? You know, one of theirs was doing business as an extreme sport. Doing business as an extreme sport, because they're always cutting edge. This company was always cutting edge, right? And one of the things that attracted Janet and Chris to them was, we'll do this pilot program because you guys are willing to take action. And so they actually said, okay, what can we do as an extreme sport? How will it affect the bottom line? So you have to take these, create a culture action plan, which is a business plan. You must then take those airy-fairy concepts, break them down into markers, which are milestones, like goals, and then say, what are the actions we will take to make these things happen? You must have that productivity piece, no doubt about it. We didn't have enough time to talk about all of them.
We're definitely going to have you back, Pat, at some time, less than 5 years this time around. So that's my commitment. But just for those beautiful people, beautiful souls who are listening and made it to the end of the episode, Beth, where could people find you And what are the kind of things that are on your focus these days? Maybe there's some people who decide to take the passion test with you, or organization that's interested to bring you on board. How could people find you, and how can you serve them?
Very good. Quickly, I'm at moneylifefreedom.com. That's one. The other place, you can just email me, Beth at Master Life Inc. I am on LinkedIn, Master Life Incorporated. I'm on Facebook. You can find me. Also, if you're interested in looking at passion test related things, you can contact me. I give everybody a 20-minute free consult, because here's the deal. You have to be a good fit for me. And so there are certain things that I do. I do a free 20-minute. Let's see if I can serve you. Let's see if you're my ideal client, because I have an idea of who my ideal client is. And 20 minutes free, just send me a little note, Beth at masterlifeinc.com. It's Inc. like incorporated. And I will absolutely, 20 minutes, we'll see what happens. Here's my new joy. I love the passion test. I love it. Passion Test for Business helps bring many more people into living their passion. So I believe in that rock in the pond that ripples out. My rock is a bigger rock if I do it with companies, with corporations, because I impact more people. So that is my favorite thing right now, because I feel like the impact is bigger. The sooner the world is passionate, doing what they love, the sooner there we will have a peaceful, cooperative world. And so the more people I can reach when people love what they're doing, conflict reduces. So that's my
And
my
we
message.
Can only approach it one passionate person at a time. So you heard the lady.
Passionate company at a time.
There you go. You heard the lady. This is the offer, guys. Like, reach out to Beth. She'll be happy to give you a complimentary 20-minute session. Yeah. This is a steal. So go get it. Hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll keep
Thank
on
you
bringing
so
you.
Much. This has been so fun.
Love it, Beth. Thank you so much. Thank you for being a positive force to the world, making it more passionate, bringing people together. It's just a joy having you and having conversations with you. Thanks everybody for listening.
Thank you, Stoyan, for doing the amazing work you're doing. Appreciative.
Yes, let's go. Let's go, guys.
Thank you.
Have an amazing and passionate day, and see you back in the next episode of Productivity Mastery. Ciao.
's for listening. Make sure to subscribe to my monthly newsletter by visiting stoyanyankov.com, and also learn about the Perform methodology and the Perform book, as well as our various personal and team coaching offers. Stay tuned and keep performing. We'll